Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is. Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have a report on unmanned aircraft called drones. Some religious leaders think these flying machines are unethical or morally bad when used in targeted attacks. Recently, a small remote-controlled aircraft crashed on the grounds of the White House, the official home of the President of the United States. Experts say there is no good way to protect against these now widely available devices, often called drones. The U.S. Secret Service has launched an investigation of the crash. This was not the first incident of a flying machine on the White House grounds. In September 1994, a pilot crashed a small airplane into the area known as the South Lawn. That event led to increased security. But the latest incident calls attention to the increased vulnerability of the traditional home of U.S. presidents. Thanks to developments in low-cost electronics, lightweight materials, and mechanical parts, drones are now available to anyone. The Federal Aviation Administration is responsible for safety in U.S. airspace. The FAA limits the flight of drones operated by private citizens to a height of about 120 meters, and the operators must be able to see the device as it flies. But newer drones can be pre-programmed to fly mechanically along what are called waypoints. Matthew Spenko works at the Illinois Institute of Technology Robotics Lab. He says some drone manufacturers use computer programs to restrict movement of the devices. Such a program can give the drone commands not to operate in some areas. But systems like these can be disabled. Matthew Waite is a journalism professor at the University of Nebraska. He studies how drones can be used to report news events. He says the recent incident at the White House may lead to new rules governing the use of drones. He suspects not all of the measures will be effective. Mr. Waite says the White House is well protected, but he warns that someone who wants to can still create a lot of problems. In his words, if somebody wants to cause harm and havoc with a device and some explosives, there is very little to stop them. The Secret Service does not have a dependable way to identify and disable drones. Matthew Waite says the agency will reconsider its methods for guaranteeing security at the White House. But he thinks the danger from small aircraft there is small. Drones are a secretive yet important part of United States efforts for fighting terrorism overseas. Supporters say targeted drone attacks keep U.S. troops out of harm's way while limiting injuries to civilians. But some religious leaders say the use of unmanned aircraft to attack suspected terrorists is morally wrong. At a recent meeting in New Jersey, they demanded an immediate halt to such raids. The group of religious leaders first met in 2006 after reports about possible mistreatment of prisoners at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. That meeting started an influential movement against torture. Now they are talking about the morality of drone warfare. The Reverend George Hunsinger teaches theology at Princeton Theological Seminary. He calls drone attacks remote-controlled killing.
It's a video game. You see these soldiers, these pilots joking in the cockpit, and you see what's on the screen, and you see, you know, all those crosshairs and so on, and they're blowing people up as they cross the street in a sidewalk. I mean, on what grounds?
U.S. officials say drone attacks have killed known terrorists in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Yemen. But human rights groups say civilians are often killed in the attacks. They say civilian deaths are hard to count because the drone program is partly directed by the Central Intelligence Agency. During his recent visit to India, President Obama suggested that drone attacks would continue in areas like Yemen.
Because the alternative would be massive U.S. deployments in perpetuity, which would create its own blowback and cause more problems than it would potentially solve.
Susan Thistlethwaite is a former president of the Chicago Theological Seminary. She says that some of the actions taken by the United States are contradictory.
We have an administration or State Department conducting one foreign policy, and we have the CIA conducting a different and in many ways contradictory foreign policy.
Drones allow you to use violence in situations where you would never send in boots on the ground, troops, so that it actually expands the theater of war. And you can make a case now that drones make the whole world a battlefield.
Mohammed Majid is a Muslim religious leader. He was born in Sudan. He says drone attacks create more terrorists. The religious leaders are largely opposed to warfare, but their earlier campaign helped influence Congress to investigate the conditions at Abu Ghraib. In the end, former President George W. Bush banned the use of torture. Words in this story. Contradictory, noun, involving or having information that disagrees with other information, containing a contradiction. Drone, noun, an unmanned aircraft or ship guided by remote control or computers. Seminary, noun, a school for training religious leaders such as priests, ministers, and rabbis. Theology, noun, the study of God and religious beliefs. Secret Service, noun, a U.S. government department in charge of protecting elected leaders of the U.S. and visiting leaders. Vulnerable, adjective, open to attack, harm, or damage. What do you think about the use of drones? Should regular citizens have access to them? Are drones used in war morally wrong? Send us an email with your comments. learningenglish@voanews.com. That's all the time we have for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English. This is In the News. The battle between the Islamic State group and the coalition fighting to defeat it intensified this week. The Islamic State released a video of what appeared to be a Jordanian fighter pilot. The video showed him trapped in a cage and being burned alive. The images shocked people around the world. Jordanian officials identified the young man as Muath al-Kasasbeh. They say he was captured in December after his F-16 airplane went down over northern Syria. At the time, his plane was taking part in United States-led coalition airstrikes against Islamic State targets. The Islamic State had recently offered to trade him for an Iraqi. Jordanian officials captured Sajida al-Rishawi after she was involved in a terror attack 10 years ago in Amman. 60 people died in that attack. Jordan said it would consider releasing the would-be suicide bomber if it received proof that the pilot was still alive. Jordan's King Abdullah was in Washington on a state visit when the video appeared on the Internet. Jordanian officials say they believe the pilot was killed a month ago. In a statement, King Abdullah called on Jordanians to stand strong. He returned home to find the streets of Amman filled with supporters. Many were calling for action against the Islamic State group, also known as ISIL. The next day, Jordan executed 2 jailed militants, including Sajida al-Rishawi. Within hours, the Jordanian military launched airstrikes against Islamic State targets. Islamic State forces control parts of Syria and Iraq. Its fighters are accused of killing thousands of civilians in the 2 countries. Some observers believe they have executed hundreds of Syrian and Iraqi security forces. Islamic State militants have also killed a number of foreigners. Last month, the group announced the execution of 2 Japanese men. The Islamic State group says it targeted the 2 because Japan offered $200 million in non-military aid to countries fighting the Islamic State. A United States official told VOA, ISIL is using the video of the pilot's killing and videos of other violence to energize its followers. The official added that in the minds of the militants, the images show the group's strength. Yona Alexander directs the International Center for Terrorism Studies at the Potomac Institute. He says ISIL's use of violence and propaganda is an effort to show the group is able to influence world events, even when it cannot win militarily. In his words, "You are talking about terrorism as a great equalizer, which means you kill one, you don't need missiles. Their aim is to be able to be equal to a superpower like the United States." Late Friday, Islamic State militants claimed that a Jordanian airstrike killed an American aid worker the group has been holding. They said she was buried under the wreckage of a building in northern Syria. The Site Intelligence Group reported the claim. The Obama administration said it could not confirm the report. A U.S. official said the State Department has confirmed that Americans are being held overseas, including by the Islamic State. But she said she could not provide more details about this case. And that's In the News. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Now, the special English program, American Stories. Today, we tell a traditional American story called A Tall Tale. A Tall Tale is a story about a person who is larger than life. The descriptions in the story are exaggerated, much greater than in real life. This makes the story funny. Long ago, the people who settled in undeveloped areas in America first told tall tales. After a hard day's work, people gathered to tell each other funny stories. Each group of workers had its own tall tale hero. Paul Bunyan was a hero of North America's lumberjacks, the workers who cut down trees. He was known for his strength, speed, and skill. Tradition says he cleared forests from the northeastern United States to the Pacific Ocean. Some people say Paul Bunyan was the creation of storytellers from the middle western Great Lakes area of the United States. Other people say the stories about him came from French Canada. Early in the 20th century, a writer prepared a collection of Paul Bunyan stories. They were included in a publication from the Red River Lumber Company in Minnesota. It is not known if the stories helped the company's sales, but they became extremely popular. Here is Shep O'Neill with our story about Paul Bunyan.
Many years ago, Paul Bunyan was born in the northeastern American state of Maine. His mother and father were shocked when they first saw the boy. Paul was so large at birth that five large birds had to carry him to his parents. When the boy was only a few weeks old, he weighed more than 45 kilograms. As a child, Paul was always hungry. His parents needed 10 cows to supply milk for his meals. Before long, he ate 50 eggs and 10 containers of potatoes every day. Young Paul grew so big that his parents did not know what to do with him. Once, Paul rolled over so much in his sleep that he caused an earthquake. This angered people in the town where his parents lived, so the government told his mother and father they would have to move him somewhere else. Paul's father built a wooden cradle, a traditional bed for a baby. His parents put the cradle in waters along the coast of Maine. However, every time Paul rolled over, huge waves covered all the coastal towns. So his parents brought their son back on land. They took him into the woods. This is where he grew up. As a boy, Paul helped his father cut down trees. Paul had the strength of many men. He also was extremely fast. He could turn off a light and then jump into his bed before the room got dark. Maine is very cold for much of the year. One day, it started to snow. The snow covered Paul's home and a nearby forest. However, this snow was very unusual. It was blue. The blue snow kept falling until the forest was covered. Paul put on his snowshoes and went out to see the unusual sight. As he walked, Paul discovered an animal stuck in the snow. It was a baby ox. Paul decided to take the ox home with him. He put the animal near the fireplace. After the ox got warmer, his hair remained blue. Paul decided to keep the blue ox and named him Babe. Babe grew very quickly. One night, Paul left him in a small building with the other animals. The next morning, the barn was gone, and so was Babe. Paul searched everywhere for the animal. He found Babe calmly eating grass in a valley, with the barn still on top of his back. Babe followed Paul and grew larger every day. Every time Paul looked, Babe seemed to grow taller. In those days, much of North America was filled with thick green forests. Paul Bunyan could clear large wooded areas with a single stroke of his large, sharp axe. Paul taught Babe to help with his work. Babe was very useful. For example, Paul had trouble removing trees along a road that was not straight. He decided to tie one end of the road to what remained of a tree in the ground. Paul tied the other end to Babe. Babe dug his feet in the ground and pulled with all his strength until the road became straight. In time, Paul and Babe the Blue Ox left Maine and moved west to look for work in other forests. Along the way, Paul dug out the Great Lakes to provide drinking water for Babe. They settled in a camp near the Onion River in the state of Minnesota. Paul's camp was the largest in the country. The camp was so large that a man had to have 1 week's supply of food when walking from one side of the camp to the other. Paul decided to get other lumberjacks to help with the work. His work crew became known as the Seven Axe Men. Each man was more than 2 meters tall and weighed more than 160 kilograms. All of the axe men were named Elmer. That way, they all came running whenever Paul called them. The man who cooked for the group was named Sourdough Sam. He made everything, except coffee, from sourdough, a substance used in making sourdough bread. Every Sunday, Paul and his crew ate hotcakes. Each hotcake was so large that it took 5 men to eat one. Paul usually had 10 or more hotcakes, depending on how hungry he was. The table where the men ate was so long that a server usually drove to one end of the table and stayed the night. The server drove back in the morning with a fresh load of food. Paul needed someone to help with the camp's finances. He gave the job to a man named Johnny Inkslinger. Johnny kept records of everything, including wages and the cost of feeding Babe. He sometimes used 9 containers of writing fluid a day to keep such detailed records. The camp also was home to Sport, the reversible dog. One of the workers accidentally cut Sport in two. The man hurried to put the dog back together, but made a mistake. He bent the animal's back the wrong way. However, that was not a problem for Sport. He learned to run on his front legs until he was tired. Then he turned the other way and ran on his back legs. Big mosquitoes were a problem at the camp. The men attacked the insects with their axes and long sticks. Before long, the men put barriers around their living space. Then Paul ordered them to get big bees to destroy the mosquitoes. But the bees married the mosquitoes, and the problem got worse. They began to produce young insects. One day, the insects' love of sweets caused them to attack a ship that was bringing sugar to the camp. At last, the mosquitoes and bees were defeated. They ate so much sugar, they could not move. Paul always gave Babe the Blue Ox a 35-kilogram piece of sugar when he was good, but sometimes Babe liked to play tricks. At night, Babe would make noises and hit the ground with his feet. The men at the camp would run out of the buildings where they slept, thinking it was an earthquake. When winter came, Babe had trouble finding enough food to eat. Snow covered everything. Ole, the blacksmith, solved the problem. He made huge green sunglasses for Babe. When Babe wore the sunglasses, he thought the snow was grass. Before long, Babe was strong and healthy again. One year, Paul's camp was especially cold. It was so cold that the men let their facial hair grow very long. When the men spoke, their words froze in the air. Everything they said remained frozen all winter long and did not melt until spring. Paul Bunyan and Babe left their mark on many areas. Some people say they were responsible for creating Puget Sound in the western state of Washington. Others say Paul Bunyan and Babe cleared the trees from the states of North Dakota and South Dakota. They prepared this area for farming. Babe the Blue Ox died in South Dakota. One story says he ate too many hotcakes. Paul buried his old friend there. Today, the burial place is known as the Black Hills. Whatever happened to Paul Bunyan? There are lots of stories. Some people say he was last seen in Alaska, or even the Arctic Circle. Another tradition says he still returns to Minnesota every summer. It says Paul moves in and out of the woods, so few people ever know that he is there.
You have just heard the story of Paul Bunyan. It was adapted for Special English by George Grow. Your narrator was Shep O'Neill. Join us again next week for another American story in Special English on the Voice of America. This is Faith Lapidus.